Turn with me to Leviticus chapter 23. It's an interesting chapter that we're in. If those of you who are visiting, we're working our way through Leviticus, which if you are visiting and you know anything about Leviticus, you're like, why are you doing a sermon series through Leviticus? Well, what we're doing is we're treasure hunting. We're like mining through God's word, looking for the treasures that God has. And he has many treasures in Leviticus, including chapter 23, which is what we're up to today. It's an interesting chapter. It lays out the holidays or the special feasts that God wanted the Israelites to observe throughout the year. So we have holidays that we observe. And God was putting together a calendar with holidays for the Israelites. There's really only one of these feasts that we still observe today. And so when you come up to this chapter and if you read through it on your own, it might seem irrelevant at first. But as we see what God was doing with his people in their use of time and how he was structuring their time really for them by giving them this calendar, I think it will really help us to see the importance of how we structure our time. We'll see how important it is that we structure it, how much impact that our time has on us and the decisions that we make about how to spend our time. It changes the way we think. It actually affects the way that we approach life. It affects our identity and just, yeah, the way that we approach life. So if you think about your life, each one of us has a schedule that we follow. So there are daily schedules, weekly, monthly, and annual. Those are the kind of the building blocks by which we schedule our and arrange our time. This is shaped by what's known as the Gregorian calendar, which is the calendar that we're used to. It's kind of our normal calendar, possibly the only calendar that you've ever heard of. It actually has only been around for about 500 years. 1582, it was established by Pope Gregory the 13th. But since then, it's become widely used throughout the world, even though there are still some nations and different religions that use their own calendar and operate according to their own calendar that is unique and different than our calendar. So our calendar, as all of us know, but I just want to point out things that we probably take for granted, but it's arranged in different segments that we're all familiar with. I think I have a picture of one. So that looks familiar to us. There's 12 months, there are 52 weeks, and there are 365 days. Each one of these different groupings makes up 1 year. And then each of those are divided up in further ways. So we have months that are divided into about 30 days. We have weeks. What our understanding of a week is 7 days make up a week. And each day then is divided into 24 hours. And that provides a framework, kind of that system provides a framework by which we structure our time and activities. We kind of fill in the blanks, and how we do that has a huge influence on our lives, a huge influence. It creates really a unique story that we live in. So to use the 50th wedding anniversary, there was a 50th wedding anniversary yesterday. Many of you attended that, family came in. That created a unique story because that was scheduled in the day for those of us who went. And if you did something else yesterday, you scheduled that and it created a story that you lived in. It gives you a sense of identity. It shapes the way that we look at and think about our lives and world. And so this morning I want us to consider if we're structuring our schedules and our time in a way that our identity in life and our approach to life is centered on God, or if it's centered on other things, which is very easy for all of us to do. And I'm preaching like this was very challenging and convicting chapter this week as I thought through these things. I struggle at these in this area, so I'm preaching to myself. So in the calendar that God set up for his people, we're going to see an intentional pattern by which they would spend a considerable amount of time meeting with him. Okay, huge portions of time were set aside, that God set aside for his people to meet with him. And it was a pattern that was established for their good, so that they would thrive and they would excel. And I want to use that pattern to compare to our schedules and lifestyles to see if we might need to make some changes to connect with God and take better care of our souls. So when God delivered the Israelites out of Egypt, we looked at this a few years ago when I was preaching through Exodus. One of the things that we saw is that as he's bringing them out of slavery and recreating them as a people, he gave them a whole new calendar to live by. That was one of the first things that he did. And actually, on that day that they left Egypt, that was day number one in their calendar. That was their new, you know, New Year's Day as we understand it. That was their New Year's Day and still is today on the Jewish calendar. Up to that point, they would have been following a different calendar. They would have been following the Egyptian calendar, which is different. I'll talk about that in a little bit. That calendar didn't have anything to do with Yahweh and you know, structuring time to connect with Yahweh, but this new calendar was all about that. It was centered on him. It would prioritize time with him, and it would do that through a series of seven feasts, and that's what Leviticus 23 is about. It describes those feasts. And so I want us to see what they were. I want us to see what their role was in the lives of the Israelites. And then I want us to do that comparison to ours and see if our own schedules, you know, consider our own schedules and how we structure our time to see if we need to maybe realign our priorities by how we structure our time. I found a lot of helpful information listening to a podcast. I have it up here from the Bible Project. You could probably Google that. What Israel's feasts teach us. The guy who did this was a Jewish scholar, an expert in Hebrew. And so after I'd done some studying and then I listened to this podcast, it's like, oh my goodness, this guy sees stuff in here that I would have no way and no clue of seeing. So I encourage you to listen to that. It's about an hour long. So I got a lot of the information that I'm sharing this morning came from that podcast. So let's start Leviticus chapter 23, verses 1 through 2. We're going to work our way through this chapter. Here's how it starts. The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Speak to the people of Israel and say to them, 'These are the appointed feasts of the Lord that you shall proclaim as holy convocations. They are my appointed feasts.'" So there's a couple phrases I want us to look at. One is appointed feasts. The other is holy convocations. Yahweh is about to let Moses know about the sacred times on the Jewish calendar, and those are what are called in this, in the ESV, they're appointed feasts. So kind of like what we understand as holidays, but not really, because even our holidays, we have maybe three holidays that are, I guess we call them religious holidays or Christian holidays. The rest are a mix of cultural and federal holidays. These holidays or feasts that they had were all about connecting with Yahweh. So I learned that the Hebrew word behind appointed feasts means that there were certain times that Yahweh set aside where he would intentionally meet with his people in a unique way. So when he's saying appointed feasts, he's saying, I'm appointing these times that I'm going to meet with you in a unique way. And he also says they were to be holy convocations, which I didn't know what convocation meant, so I looked that up. They were to be holy, set apart, okay, set apart times when the people would assemble. So convocations, assemblies, holy assemblies, when they would assemble to meet with Yahweh. Sometimes they would assemble at the tabernacle, sometimes in their own homes, but they would assemble. And the first of these was a weekly time known as Sabbath. And that's where he goes next. Verse 3, 6 days shall work be done, but on the seventh day is a Sabbath of solemn rest, a holy convocation. You shall do no work. It is a Sabbath to the Lord in all your dwelling places. So every seventh day, they had a holiday. They had a holy convocation. They had a day set apart to meet with Yahweh. And we look at that and we don't think anything, you know, a seven-day week is normal to us. That's the way the Gregorian calendar is set up as well. But a seven-day week was actually different than what the Israelites were used to up to that point. They spent the last 400 years in Egypt, and they did not have a seven-day week in Egypt. They had a 10-day week. So they had 12 months like we do, plus 5 extra days. And then of those 12 months were 30-day months, and each of those months was divided into 3 weeks, which normally we think of a 4-ish, 4.5. They had 3 weeks, 10 days each. And so that was the first difference. The second difference was the work-rest pattern in Egypt. And so they would work for 8 days and rest for 2 days. So we have a 2-day weekend, but we have a 5-day work week. So there they had an 8-day work week and a 2-day weekend for some of the workers. But we're talking about the Israelites were slaves. They probably didn't have a weekend. Okay, they're working every day. You know, when Moses originally came to Pharaoh, he asked for permission to just take him out into the wilderness for a day to celebrate, and Pharaoh said no, okay? No time off. So the Israelites, this is a huge change from a 10-day week to a 7-day week, from working every day to every seventh day, where it's like a mandatory day off. Big change. And so as Yahweh implemented a new calendar for them to live by, he instituted this 7-day week with the 6 days of work, one mandatory day of rest, and that applied to everyone, whether you were a servant or a tribal leader, it applied to everyone. It was to be their regular rhythm of work rest, okay? A regular rhythm forever. 6 days of work, 1 day off, was the basic building block in this new calendar. And this Sabbath was to be a holy convocation. So it was a weekly appointed time in which Yahweh would intentionally meet with his people in a unique way. It's made me think differently about coming to church this morning, okay? And hopefully you can see why. This was a day set apart from the rest of those days in the week to meet with Yahweh. And Yahweh is the one who implemented this and set it apart. It was a time for them to meet with him and be refreshed in him. And so people would gather in their homes to begin with. Later on, they had a pattern of meeting in the synagogue. And obviously, nowadays, we meet in church buildings. And they were to observe the Sabbath rest. And they were to rest, okay? They were to rest from work and rest to Yahweh. So you rest from something, you rest to Yahweh. Cease striving and be refreshed in Yahweh. Even in the middle of planting season, even in the middle of the harvest, you take a day off. Yahweh had already taught them about the Sabbath before this time. There's a couple of passages in Exodus which was a few months before what we're reading. And he connected the Sabbath and the 6-day work week with the Sabbath with the 7 days of creation. So Exodus 31, 16 and 17, I have it up here, says, "Therefore the people of Israel shall keep the Sabbath, observing the Sabbath throughout their generations as a covenant forever. It is a sign forever between me and the people of Israel that in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, and on the seventh day he rested and was refreshed." And so this 7-day week reflected the story of creation and put Yahweh in the center of their culture, at the center of their attention, and the center of their weekly rhythms as a community. Everything's new still at this point. Everything's being developed, and this was developed as the way their time would be structured. One entire day, think about that. You know, we think kind of like that, like, oh, it's Sunday, we go to church. But a lot of us, probably, and me included, it's like, well, that takes about three-ish hours, you know, you stay and visit. But then when I get home on Sunday afternoon, I'm not going back to my normal work, but I'm kind of, I like projects, I like working on stuff. I'm not really resting to Yahweh, and it's like, oh, what do I need to do? That's a question for all of us. What do we need to do? One entire day out of seven dedicated to Him. That would shape their identity. We're the people who take a day off every 7 days to meet with our God. That's different than the other nations that they were in. This was a huge part of their new calendar, but there were other appointed feasts as well. There's seven. So this is a weekly feast. This is feast number one. There's six more, and these are all annual feasts, and they came in two waves. So the first wave was spring feasts. So there's about three feasts in the spring. And then in the fall, in their seventh month, there were three more. So I'm going to walk through these a little more quickly than this first one. Each one of these was a time set apart by Yahweh for His people to meet with Him in a unique way. So let's read verses 5 through 8. In the first month, on the 14th day of the month, at twilight, it is the Lord's Passover. And on the 15th day of the same month is the Feast of Unleavened Bread to the Lord. For 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread. On the first day you shall have a holy convocation. You shall not do any ordinary work, but you shall present a food offering to the Lord for 7 days. On the seventh day is a holy convocation. You shall not do any ordinary work. So this is all one feast. It starts with the Passover, which isn't a separate feast, but it is the kickoff to the Feast of Unleavened Bread. The Passover started on the evening of, you got the 14th day of the month. Their days started at sundown. So the 14th day of the month ends, and the Passover is observed at dark, and that's the 15th day. So really the feast starts on the 15th day with Passover, and then for 7 days, you can see there, they weren't to eat any bread that had leaven in it. They were also to bring a food offering to Yahweh. It went for, I believe, 7 days total. They had a Sabbath rest on the first of those seven days and on the last day. And it was kind of a floating holiday, kind of like we think of Christmas. It's always the set date each year, but because of the seven-day week, it changes the date, I guess, each year. So sometimes they would have the Sabbath of the this feast would actually fall on the weekly Sabbath, but most of the time it didn't. So they'd have weekly Sabbath, Sabbath, another weekly Sabbath, Sabbath, and another weekly Sabbath. Lots of Sabbaths in there, okay? This is a huge amount of time that is dedicated to meeting with Yahweh. It was intended in this feast, as you probably can see, to retell the story and remind the people of their recreation as a nation. So it brought them back to their New Year's Day, okay? Day number one, their last night in Egypt as slaves. If you remember, the angel of death passed over their homes because of the blood of the Passover lamb that was around their doors. But on that night, every firstborn in Egypt died. And Pharaoh then sent the Israelites away, you know, sent them packing so fast that they didn't have time for the leaven or the yeast to raise in their bread, okay? And so this feast brought them back. They're eating unleavened bread for 7 days. There are other significances, I don't even know if that's a word, but things that are significant in these feasts that point to Christ that I'm not even going to get into today, but certainly the Passover is rich with symbolism and foreshadowing of Christ. Okay, so this is this first annual feast on the Jewish calendar. The second and third kind of go together. So the second is the Feast of First Fruits, and the third feast was the Feast of Weeks, and those two feasts were related to each other. So first you have the Feast of Unleavened Bread, then you have the Feast of First Fruits, and then the Feast of Weeks. Both of the second and third feast had to do with bringing a portion of the harvest into the tabernacle to dedicate it to Yahweh. So there was, as I was reading through these things, there's kind of three harvests in Israel. You have the early spring harvest, a summer harvest, and then another one kind of in the fall. And it's different things that are being harvested during that time. But the first two harvests were connected with these two feasts. So the Feast of First Fruits was connected with the early spring harvest, and the Feast of Weeks was connected with the summer harvest. So let's read. I'm going to read just different portions. I'm going to jump around a little bit here just to get to some of the details that I want to see us to see about these. So starting at verse 9, it might be a little easier just to read it up here. You can see which verses I'm reading. Starting at verse 9. And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Speak to the people of Israel and say to them, when you come into the land that I give you and reap its harvest, you shall bring the sheaf of the first fruits of your harvest to the priest, and he shall wave the sheaf before the Lord so that you may be accepted. On the day after the Sabbath, the priest shall wave it." So that's the Feast of First Fruits. There's a few more details that I'm going to skip over and then get to verse 15, which is the Feast of Weeks. "You shall count 7 full weeks from the day after the Sabbath, from the day that you brought the sheaf of the wave offering. You shall count 50 days. To the day after the 7th Sabbath, you shall present a grain offering of new grain to the Lord. And you shall make a proclamation on the same day. You shall hold a holy convocation." This is verse 21. I skipped a few. "You shall not do any ordinary work. It is a statute forever in all your dwelling places throughout your generations." So you start to see in here the repeat of sevens is very common. So you have 7 days of creation. Here you have 7 sevens, and then the next day is this third feast. All of the people of Israel were to offer the first fruits of both their spring harvest and their summer harvest, and those coincided with these two different feasts. And these were days, again, set aside by Yahweh to meet with his people. The second one was 50 days after the first one, which is why it was also called, does anybody know? Pentecost, okay? So Pentecost didn't start in Acts chapter 2. Pentecost started way back here, and it was on Pentecost that the Holy Spirit came in Acts chapter 2. Okay, in his new covenant fullness. But that third feast is also called Pentecost. These feasts then told the story of God blessing the people with an abundance in the harvest. So what they did then was they gave back to God what he had given to them. All right, so that's the three spring feasts. Now we get into the three fall feasts and just briefly look at these. All of these feasts took place in the 7th month, which was the same time of year that we think of October. Okay? So this is the 7th month. It's for them, for us, October. Leviticus 23, verses 23 through 25. "And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, speak to the people of Israel, saying, in the 7th month, on the first day of the month, you shall observe a day of solemn rest, a memorial proclaimed with blast of trumpets, a holy convocation. You shall not do any ordinary work, and you shall present a food offering to the Lord." So this is a pretty simple feast where they're blasting these trumpets as kind of an announcement that this 7th month has begun. It's a proclamation of the upcoming feasts, and simply blast the trumpets, and then another day of rest. That was a floater as well. And so it could be on the weekly Sabbath or a different day. That blast of trumpets set apart that month for the next two feasts. And the next one, so this is feast number, this is the second fall feast. It'd be feast number 6 described in this chapter. This happens on the 10th day of the month, and it was a big one. I preached about this one on Palm Sunday, and it was the Day of Atonement, okay? A huge feast. It was, and by feast, they actually fasted on the Day of Atonement. So they weren't eating, they were fasting. the Day of Atonement, the one day out of the year when the high priest went into that Holy of Holies, went beyond the veil, carrying the blood of the bull and the goat, if you remember from that sermon, to sprinkle on the mercy seat to make atonement, to cover the sins of the people. And so that day, huge day, the highest spiritual, I would say, significance of any other day on the Israelite calendar, because that was a spiritual reset for the people of Israel. All the sins of the past year, both intentional and unintentional, were covered by the blood of the bull and the goat. They were atoned for, and if you remember, they were placed on the head of the scapegoat, who then went out, was led into the wilderness, never to return, taking all those sins out into the wilderness. And on that day, the people were, as I said, they were to fast and observe another Sabbath rest in their homes. Huge day. That feast would actually foretell a story of what their Messiah would do. And so it prepared the people for his first coming. And then we get to the final feast. And this is called the Feast of Tabernacles or Booths. And that began on the 15th of that month. So you have the trumpets blasting on the first day. On the 10th day, you have the Day of Atonement. And on the 15th day through the 21st is this Feast of Tabernacles. You got a 7-day feast here in the 7th day month that kind of coordinates with a 7-day feast in the first month. So there's a lot of connections going on here. So this is the final verses, I think, that I'll read this morning, verses 39 through 43. On the 15th day of the 7th month, when you've gathered in the produce of the land, so that's a third harvest, you shall celebrate the feast of the Lord 7 days. On the first day shall be a solemn rest, and on the 8th day shall be a solemn rest, so 2 more Sabbaths. And you shall take on the first day the fruit of splendid trees. Notice this, splendid trees, branches of palm trees and boughs of leafy trees and willows of the brook. And you shall rejoice before the Lord your God 7 days. You shall celebrate it as a feast to the Lord for 7 days in the year. It is a statute forever throughout your generations. You shall celebrate it in the 7th month. You shall dwell in your booths for 7 days. All native Israelites shall dwell in booths, that your generations may know that I made the people of Israel dwell in booths when I brought them out of the land of Egypt. I am the Lord your God, Yahweh Elohim. So the podcast that I listened to looked at the details here and pointed out that the people are to make these little tents, okay? And it might be individuals or it might be families make these little tents, and they're supposed to use beautiful, lush branches and then live in these tents and just have joy in Yahweh for 7 days. And it was to remind people of the many gifts that God gave his people while he was bringing them through the wilderness, but it also, because they're in tents, these are not permanent dwellings, they're just booths, it reminded them that not only does he give good gifts to us in the wilderness, but the best is yet to come. Gary Sandman, end of his newsletters, the best is yet to come, okay? So there's ties in with our hope for our promised land of heaven, but for them back then, it was the promised land of Canaan, and it fit them into that story and into their identity as God's people for future generations as he was taking them to the promised land. Okay, so tons of details here. All these 7 feasts, all of these were part of the story of God's people. Okay, they told different aspects of God's story because they were fit into the structure of Yahweh's new calendar for them, and they shaped then the identity of those of the people, their lifestyles. Because you're getting into this regular 7-day rhythm. You've got multiple feasts in the spring, multiple in the 7th month. It's changing their lifestyles, and it's affecting the mindset of the people of Israel with Yahweh at the center. Okay? So part of the, if you're just lost in all the different feasts, that's probably good to just see that tremendous amount of time was dedicated by Yahweh to the people so that the people could dedicate time to Yahweh because they needed it. I have to believe Yahweh knew they need this. If I'm going to stay at the center of their lives, they need this structure in their schedule. And even with that calendar, they strayed away from him. And it could be because they didn't follow it. I don't know. And so I think what this chapter needs to do for us is it needs to make us look at our lives and our time and our calendars and our planners. What does that look like? What or who is at the center? Is it your work? Is it your children? Is it your hobbies? Is it nothing? Just kind of trying to keep your head above water? Or is it God? So we don't have a calendar anymore that's set up by God to keep him at the center of our lives. We have a calendar set up by a pope 500 years ago that's been taken over by an always busy, always advancing, consumeristic, and competitive culture of Western civilization. Has taken over our calendar, therefore, taken over our lives, taken over our identities. Man, I would propose that we're all suffering because of that. We're suffering because it doesn't keep God at the center and it doesn't allow enough time to meet with him to refresh our souls. That's based on the assumption that Yahweh knew what his people needed and he structured their time according to that. And when I look at my calendar, it doesn't meet up real well with that pattern. Maybe yours does, but I'm guessing you struggle along with me in this. To some extent, I think that we have control of our schedules to some extent. Like, there's certain things that would be really hard to not do. School, like, you kind of got to do school and work. Like, those, that dictates your schedule, but that still leaves time for most of us. Discretionary time, or whatever you want to call it, to decide how we're going to spend it. If God is speaking to us today through his word, I think he's telling us we need to spend more time meeting with him. That's what he's telling me. So, yeah, this is convicting. This is challenging. I don't do well setting aside time to rest in God. I have a lot of things that I want to do and a lot of things that I need to do. So for me, it's things related to my work, my responsibilities as a husband and father, the upkeep of my house and material possessions, stuff's always breaking down, recreational activities, community engagement, social activities. I always have stuff to do. I mean, my to-do list takes a while. It's on my computer, and scrolling through it takes a while. It does go up through like the next 3 years, but maybe I should get rid of some of that stuff. Okay, I like to work. Like, my wife can tell you, I like to work. Like, I don't like to rest. I like to work. I'm telling you things because I think some of you can relate to me. I find a lot of satisfaction in accomplishing different things. But the problem is my identity, you know, my sense of who I am, my mindset, my lifestyle revolves around the things that I'm doing. And so if I'm not spending enough time meeting with God, my life doesn't revolve around him. It's not that I'm not a Christian. It's not that I don't love God. But if I'm spending time doing all these other things, my life begins to revolve around them and not God. I'm thinking about that stuff, not God. And when that happens, things start to fall apart. I think of, it's like, you know, if I'm a soul, I'm choking my soul. The vine and branches, Jesus is the vine, we're the branches. My branch gets squeezed because of how I use my time. So this is something that I need to pay attention to, and you probably do as well. So just practically, it seems like we need a weekly Sabbath. How are you doing with that? You're here today. You're observing. You're making an effort to meet with God for at least an hour and 15 minutes. Okay. The pattern is a whole day a week. We don't follow the pattern just because it's a pattern. We follow the pattern because God probably knew what he was doing and how much time we needed. Man, we aren't under the old covenant anymore. We aren't required to obey the Mosaic laws. And even though we now have the abiding presence of Christ dwelling within us, who he is our Sabbath rest. He says that. So Jesus is our Sabbath rest. Even with that, I can see the wisdom, benefit, and the need for a weekly Sabbath. So if I'm going to have a life and mindset and identity that's truly centered on God, I need to rest from my work and busyness for more than a couple of hours at church on Sunday. I probably need to break away for a whole day so I can be refreshed in God. So that's one piece. Even more than that, I think we need to seriously consider taking time every day to meet with God. Like, I don't know if that was normal practice in Israel. You know, they had 6 days of work. Like, do they just get up, work all day, and go to, like, I don't know if they had daily time with God, but I think we need to seriously consider that time every day to focus on God and connect with him. So look, in your life, 15 minutes, 30 minutes, maybe an hour, some of you. Is there something that you can work into your schedule on a regular basis to center your identity and life on him? I need that. Like, going to church on Sunday isn't enough for me. I will not focus on God throughout my week. I have to have that daily time. And some days it works great. Other days it doesn't work very great. I need that time. You probably do too. And then it might be good to pay more attention to some of the Christian holidays that we already observe. Some people, actually, according to this podcast, there are a number of people who actually follow the Jewish calendar and they observe those days. You could do that. But I also think, well, we already we have a calendar, we have Christian holidays. Maybe we could make more of those, not to make more of the holiday, but to make more of connecting with God. And so I don't even know where Advent started, but Advent, how many days is Advent? I know it's 4 Sundays leading up to Christmas. How many? I thought somebody said something. It's just December? All right. So, Advent. Have you ever recognized and practiced Advent? Like, in December, we have the Advent wreath up here to bring some attention to it, but there are Advent devotionals. Maybe you could take that month to spend more time meeting with Yahweh, a devotional or something like that. Lent, is Lent a Catholic or a Lutheran thing or both? We don't do Lent, but we could. It's not a bad thing. 40 days, that one I know, okay. 40 days leading up to the Easter celebration, Good Friday and Easter. Maybe there too we could get a devotional or something and take some extra time to be with God. So we do the Sabbath. We make that a priority in our lives. Rather than just running here and there every weekend. Like, if you got to run there or here or whatever, plan in Sabbath into that. Like, don't just skip church. There's churches all over the place you could go to. Sabbath, daily quiet time, annual feasts, annual celebrations, making more of those. Because the Spirit of Jesus dwells within us, I believe that really any day can be a day when God meets with us, but I do think we need to set aside days following His pattern. Do you do that? Do you have enough time set aside to meet with Him, to connect with Him, so that your identity is Him and not the other things that you're doing? What is God calling you to do? Let's pray. Father, thank you for a chapter like this that hits us pretty square in the eyes. Hits me. It shows us what you want, what we need. I have to believe that in the rat race of our consumeristic advancing culture, that a lot of us are just trying to survive. We're just trying, you know, we're exhausted. We're just trying to keep up, and we aren't necessarily refreshed in you. We aren't centered on you. And it is, it's hard in this culture. I pray that you would help us to take at least a step in the direction of meeting more with you and refreshing our souls in you. Show us each what that would look like in our lives and help us to keep going in that direction so that our souls are refreshed and our lives are centered on you, so that our lives just reflect our God. In Jesus' name, amen.